One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, powered by SpannersReady.com, providing blogs and podcasts. Hire us to produce your podcast by going to SpannersReady.com/hire us. I'm joined in the podcasting shed by Matt Trumpets.
Hey there, Spanners. How you doing today? You must be on cloud 9.5.
Oh, you know me. I'm neutral. As long as the race is good, I don't mind. Okay, I'm not neutral at all. Hamilton won. Woohoo! I'm so happy. Hooray! So a warning to all the non-Hamilton fans. I'll try to be as not irritating as possible, but don't worry. There are a couple of haters here on the panel, and Tony will relay any hateful comments from the chat room as well. But it was a genuinely thrilling Monaco Grand Prix, Matt, because we were saying I had to miss the race live, and we were saying, well, if there's one to miss, this is the one to miss. But it wasn't really. I would love to have seen this unfold in real time with the strategies, watching the drivers dance about on the tracks. We got a real good look at individual drivers' souls almost this weekend, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. It was interesting. I made the comment that Monaco is kind of like a lottery ticket. Generally speaking, you lose, but if you win, you're going to win big. And I think for most viewers, they won big yesterday because for the first time, I think since, was it Barcelona last year, we saw an actual race for position one. And that alone was worth the price of admission.
And not even between teammates.
It was different teams, which I think, when was the last time we saw that, like a proper race for the P1 between two different teams?
No, because it's either been Mercedes tripping over themselves or was it Singapore last year where suddenly the Mercs lost performance and Vettel ran away with it?
But see, that was still a running away. I'm talking about a proper race for the first position. I think you'd have to go back to the V8 era to actually have seen something like that.
Awesome. Well, what are we doing here? We are an independent Formula One podcast, but we are delighted to be on Downforce Radio. Downforce has the biggest collections of regular motorsport shows anywhere on the internet. Truly the nation's motorsport station. Join Eurosport and Le Mans 24 commentator now, Jake Sanson, for the motorsport quiz show Pitboard. And I think that Pitboard could be a gateway drug into a lot of other forms of motorsport. We're trying to give you a race review before your Monday morning commute. Obviously, this week it's been delayed because of the bank holiday, so we're giving it to you before your Tuesday morning commute, but still your first commute of the week. All right, so we're trying to be safe for work and like super nice and polite-ish, but we want you to be able to play this podcast at work or at the very least have it on with your kids in earshot so you don't have to worry about that kind of thing. So that's some housekeeping out of the way. We've got some friends, haven't we, Matt?
Yes, it turns out, despite our best efforts, we actually do have friends.
Joining us on the line is Chris Stevens from Formula Spy. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, mate. How are you doing?
Oh, you're a little bit quiet there, Chris.
I'll try and shout.
No, it's good for your tech to be as disappointing as your general opinion.
Oh, general opinion, really? Because I actually remember some things I said last week have been proven very much true.
Hold your horses, hold your horses. You write for FormulaSpy.com. What's the last thing you wrote?
Something about qualifying, I think.
How come you never know when I ask you?
Because it's been a couple of days.
So you're writing about how I was correct when I said Mercedes reliability would be the only way a door was open for Red Bull?
No, actually, because Rosberg actually got both of those stints in. So
I don't think Rosberg counts this weekend. Joining us on the line, we have a long-lost friend. If you know him and recognize his voice, you'll know where he's from. I don't normally do intros, but I'm going to have to in this case.
Nutella, spread the love.
It's Anil Palmer. How's it going, Anil?
Great, and it's so good to finally do another podcast with you guys.
Yeah, we've been missing you on F1, and you know I've been nagging you to come on. Are you genuinely sort of up for coming here, or is this just a attrition of nagging that's got you on the show?
Oh, it's an attrition of nagging, but I mean, what a race. I can't wait to talk about it.
Excellent. And then rounding off the panel are several people headed by the fantastic Tony Thunder Beast Barnard. How's it going, T?
What up, what up? I got my legion of chat room fans coming in.
See, I that makes it sound like you're in charge of them, whereas I see it more as a Game of Thrones thing where they're warging into you and they're controlling you. You're Hodor, basically.
Calm down. Right, what it is they make awesome comments. I take some of them on, I mention them. I also steal some of them for my own, so it works out nicely for me.
Do you ever really steal them for your own?
Let's get on with the show.
Let's get on with the show. Hey, we like to start with a thing called pre-race tidbits. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not sure I'm using that word right or saying it right. Tidbits.
Yep, tidbits.
Cool.
Little tiny pieces. Hmm? Little tiny, tasty, juicy morsels.
I don't know if anyone else has got any. I've only got this one.
Oh, no, you hit the apex.
Oh, plot twist. Oh, no, you hit the apex. So Max Verstappen struggled after being a hero last week in Spain, struggled to get to grips with the walled streets of death in Monaco, Matt. Oh, and Neil's going, I thought he was God, Anil. I thought he was the second coming.
I thought so too, but it was so refreshing to see a circuit where drivers are punished for making mistakes. And even he got caught out. He wasn't the only one. Julian Palmer had a few incidents, but I guess it's a bit of a reality check after the last race. It wasn't a good weekend for him, and it didn't really go well for him in practice or in qualifying.
You know, I'm going to pick up on that. It's an interesting thing. Have you ever actually like competed like in any kind of racing event ever?
Go-karts.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I used to race bikes for a team, and it was we weren't professionals, but we were club amateurs. And what I can say is psychologically, it's interesting. Sometimes when you win, you think if you win, the pressure goes away, like you've achieved it and you can be serene and confident in that. But sometimes when you win, the pressure actually increases to do even better next time. And I think he may have fallen victim to that a little bit. Having done so well in Spain, he was trying to do even better, and he was trying to do it without the engine that Ricardo had. And I think the combination of those two things might have really not helped him out very much on the circuit. Yeah?
That's a really interesting point you've just made. There's actually a quote from the Toro Rosso boss whose name has just skipped out of my head.
Franz.
Toast.
There we go. And he said last year that the second season of a driver is more difficult than the first for that exact same reason. There's a lot more pressure on them.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how he rebounds in Canada.
Now
he got very lucky in FP3, didn't he? Because he nudged the wall at Massenet. But I remember Fernando Alonso doing a very similar thing in 2010, except he went in at a much worse angle and actually damaged the car so badly he couldn't take part in qualifying. So he got very lucky there.
Yeah, and he took that suspension knock. Was that the same side that he hit the inside of?
Same place.
Was it the same place
in the race?
So. Did he cause damage in the first knock with the one that put him out of practice? Do we know?
it was minor damage. I don't even think he knocked the suspension out. I think he may have just hit the rim. But it was towards the end of the session anyway, so he wouldn't have lost much.
Oh, you need a good aim to avoid hitting the rim. So what you need to do is not judge Max Verstappen too harshly, because when I play Formula One games, as I often do, and I will be on Xbox buying F1 2016, I don't care how good or bad it is, I haven't had an F1 game for a while now, and I want the Mist Apex community to come on and race with me with that. But during a season of the F1 computer games, I always skip Monaco because it is just so unforgiving. I'm getting some nods from some gamers. I mean, I just...
Always, especially on F1 2010, because it had that handling model where if you went anywhere near a curb, you just spun and you could never recover from it.
Yeah, so like when Monaco came up in the season, I was like, oh, it's going to take me 15 minutes to click through this, through all the various loading screens of the sessions. All right, then anything else, Matt, or go to qualifying?
No, the only other thing I'd mention is after seeing Ricardo's pace in FP1 and FP2, Mercedes did make some setup changes to at least Hamilton's car. Does anyone know if they made them to Rosberg's also, or is it just Hamilton's?
I can only assume they would do them to both, to be honest.
Well, different drivers prefer different handling, so they may not have, but I know they made his car more oversteery.
More pointy.
Yeah, a front end.
Do you know how I learned that? I learned that from listening to Button whinge all the time. That's how I learned those words. Just no grip. There's no grip out there.
Where's the balance?
Surprise.
All right, why don't we move on to podcasting? Why don't we move on to podcasting? Why don't we move on to qualifying?
You've got a major problem, Sunshine.
Again, for the 18th qualifying in a row, Hamilton's engine. Something happens to Hamilton's engine. And I watched this live on Saturday. And I found myself going, oh my goodness, the internet is about to explode. With all the sort of, the conspiracy stuff had just started to die down. And there we are in Q3 having to push Hamilton's car back to his pit box. Like, you know, you started to think, do the tinfoil crew have a point? You know, spoiler, no. But that's what I was sort of thinking at the time.
Well, it happened to both cars. So.
But visually, yeah, we only saw it happen to Hamilton's car.
Yes, it was very unfortunate that Hamilton had already left the garage and was all the way down the end of the pit lane. So the mechanics had to run all the way down to the end of the pit lane, get him on the trolley, get him all the way back again before they could send him out. And he only had enough time for, you know, one run. Rosberg, luckily, he was in the garage and he was able to get both runs in as planned. For Lewis, I mean, it does kind of explain why he was behind Nico in qualifying, because his fastest lap then ended up coming on like the fourth lap of the run.
Yeah, when Lewis had that problem, I have to admit, I've never refreshed Twitter any quicker. I was just waiting for the comments.
I
have to say, his actual lap though was really good to put him third under that pressure. If he made a mistake, he got himself behind the Ferraris, it would have really cost him.
He was a 10th up in the middle sector. It was the final sector. He lost it.
His first sector was 0.3 faster than Ricardo's fastest sector. He was on fire in that first sector. He lost time in the second sector, but was still up. In the third sector, he lost like 0.3. And Rosberg's last lap on fresh tires was what launched him into P2.
So how much time do we think Lewis might have had in the bag? Because he was running heavy, I guess, initially when his tires were fresh. And his tyres were some laps old by the time he tried to set a qualifying time.
I think it's possible pole was a possibility for him.
And if only they'd have done that, Chris Stevens and Anil Palmer wouldn't have been so smug in the WhatsApp chat. I mean, you guys called this, didn't you? You guys called Ricardo.
I also said, like, I said front row. I said they could split the Mercedes.
I
didn't discount the idea that Ricardo could be on pole. And it was a fantastic lap.
So now, wait a minute, though. Technically, then you're wrong. Because he did not split the Mercedes.
Yeah, idiot.
How are you banging on about being right all the time when you're actually wrong?
I said one of the two was going to happen. And I was right. Come on, what was it, a 13.6? They're knocking on the door of the lap record. It's amazing.
It was the highest average speed at that circuit ever.
That's what it was.
A brilliant lap. No one would argue that. It was when he did that, they barely even covered it because everyone was still talking about Mercedes. But man, you know, I saw that time. I was just like, ah, it was remarkable. Yeah.
Chat room has stuff to say because I can see the reflection. Tony's got a system where he tilts his head at the right angle and I get like a little beacon SOS. And in Morse code, he tells me the chat room has something to say.
Your face is a beacon. You're talking to me like that. Right.
I was stalling for time because you didn't look ready.
Anonymous, lots of numbers said, did Hamilton wear a hairnet during qualifying? Which is a fair point, I think. He does have a lot of hair-related issues, apparently. And
you can relate.
Fortis jumped in with, I'm going to use a bit of artistic license because of the language. Formula Spy Guy, rubbish. Nothing happened to Rosberg's car.
What?
And then Summers jumped in with, it did, Fortis. They both had an issue with fuel heating.
Thank you, Summers.
Is it just that Rosberg didn't really drive fast enough to make his overheat? Is that the...
I don't know. I just read them out, mate. I don't understand them.
Fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. So, Ricciardo sticks it on pole. Hamilton thinks he could have had pole. He certainly made it clear to anyone who'd listen that he would have pole. Would have had pole.
And I think it's important to note for everyone who's getting all excited about how fast they went, that the swimming pool complex is about 10 kilometers an hour faster this year than it was last year. So it's not quite apples to apples comparison anymore.
Yeah, who would make a mistake like that? Neil Palmer.
I can't wait to see the cars next year around there with more mechanical grip.
Yeah, the tyres, the fat rear tyres that Pirelli showed off just before qualifying, that's going to make things immense.
You are right. I cannot wait to see even wider cars not passing each other on the circuit.
Yeah. But they look awesome. They look awesome. And yeah, it's going to make the cars 11% wider. But apparently that should improve slipstreaming.
Oh, well, that will be good in Spain and other places.
Yes, not so much Monaco, maybe. But, yeah.
So there's not really a lot to say about Red Bull apart from Verstappen did not do as well. And he binned it for the 14th time in Q1.
It was Q1, yeah, because he was then last on the grid, ended up starting from the pit lane because of an issue he had just before the race. But
no, so he made it out in qualifying, but I think it's important to note, too, that he's used to and has driven that race in the Toro Rosso, which has significantly less downforce and grip than the Red Bull. And in fact, as he mentioned that in his interview, he said, I just underestimated the amount of grip that I actually had going through that corner. And I'll give him that easily.
What was interesting to me was the fact I saw Nico Rosberg make a similar mistake in practice twice, where he clouted that inside curb on the left-handed part of that chicane. But he was able to keep out of the wall. The car rode the curb better, certainly. But Verstappen, his just went straight into the wall, making the same mistake.
You had some stuff to say about Vettel and Ferrari, did you not, Matthew?
Ooh, yeah. It was fun. I think he's going to run out of objects to curse that don't have the word Ferrari in them pretty soon.
Oh, you mean he's like, is he trying to be political? And he's kind
of
like...
It was the tires. And granted, it's entertaining his command of English invective. However, I think sooner or later the word Ferrari is going to have to pop up in there because, you know.
Or at least Arriba Veni. Tony?
All right, yeah, I've got a few comments here. Summers jumps in with what we were saying earlier about the cars looking good. Do they look awesome? I hit the diagonal lines everywhere. And Fortis has just let us know that Game of Thrones is on, so he's out. So all the chat room guys here are watching the live stream at SpanishReady.com/stream. The show times are finally listed on there ahead of time, so you know when you can join us. You can watch us right from the site of the Ustream app, or both have it in as a chat room. So why not call in, sign into Skype, and add Spanish Ready?
I definitely advise that. Call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Use your mobile phone with the Skype app. Add Spanish.
You don't need
Ready.
Any fancy tech at all, do you, Spanners?
No, you just, for a 2-minute call, I can tolerate someone on their handset going, hello, hello, like that. So that's fine. Anil?
Yeah, I wonder if it's a case of the honeymoon period being over for Ferrari and Vettel. From the beginning of the year, they've been talking about winning races. After every race where things don't go well, they come out with the same message: we're going to be stronger, we're going to win at the next race. And the pace just wasn't there. I was amazed at how far off the Red Bulls, particularly, they were in qualifying. It's going to be really interesting to see if Red Bull have actually leaped them in Canada, which is a completely different circuit. But I just get this feeling that Seb's getting a bit frustrated. And we should remember, when Alonso left Ferrari, he left because he felt as though they were only ever going to finish second or third. And I just wonder if, you know, that's the situation that Sebastian's going to be in.
All right, then. Let's get it all out on the line. So people aren't privy to our WhatsApp conversations where Chris Stevens says one thing and then sort of changes it as the situation evolves.
Then I turn out to be correct.
One of the things, versions of what you said was correct, yes. So, okay then, qualifying in Canada, I think we all reckon the Mercs are going to have enough on that power track to be on pole?
Definitely they'll be favourite, but it'll be really interesting to see where Renault's new upgrade package takes them.
And I predict that will be third out of the top teams in Canada on the grid. Are you going to disagree with me, Anil?
Well, Canada's all about having a strong ICE because it's a really, the internal combustion engine, because it's a very stop and go circuit and there's some really heavy traction zones. I think Red Bull will be ahead of Ferrari because their low downforce packages for years have been incredible. I think Red Bull will be the second fastest team, but I think Merck will take pole because they just get so much power out of that combustion engine.
Thunder Beast!
Yeah, Summer's in the chat room. It's relevant now. He said it'll be close between Red Bull and Ferrari in Canada. That's what he says, so that is what it must be.
So he's kind of putting Mercedes out of that little competition and putting them ahead and saying it's going to be between those teams.
Well, possibly not. Maybe he's saying it'll be close between second and third. Who knows?
That's
the information's not complete.
That's what I said. You just repeated what I said. But it's good. I like it. It's a good, interesting new style of chat room hosting. We'll see if it catches on. Yeah,
the audio dropped out. Sorry, you're breaking up.
Chris Stevens.
Well, I was going to say, with Ferrari's supposed lack of traction compared to the Red Bull especially, I think that's going to put them behind Red Bull.
Which, interestingly, goes back to the original Honda engineer who showed up and said that they were interested in usable horsepower. And it may very well be with the aero that Red Bull has, they have more usable horsepower than Ferrari does. And Canada should answer that question pretty convincingly. And Summers also makes the point, I'm going to steal Tony's job for a second, that Renault have only used 3 tokens thus far upgrading their engine.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I saw Summers tweet that. And yes, if you're wondering, people listening, that is Summers, as in Matt Summerfield, Summers F1, the assistant technical editor at motorsport.com. The guy is a genius. The guy is worth listening to. In some ways, it's unfair on Tony to have him in the chat room. But if he says that that's an amazing thing, I believe him.
That's pretty mind-blowing because they've still got like 17 tokens left for the year. I think it's more than that.
20 tokens, he says, yeah.
Wow. And there was a great quote from one of the Renault guys where he was saying, you could spend 32 tokens on the power unit and not improve it at all.
Yeah.
And just with 3 tokens, they've made a huge, huge step forward. So, yeah, really impressive. Be interesting to see what they can do for the rest of the year.
Let's make a huge step forward towards the race and stuff.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Matt, they started behind a safety car, which wrecked potentially the only good corner of the entire Grand Prix. So when I saw that it started behind a safety car, I go, well, this, we are potentially in for a very dull afternoon, had I not spotted the glisten of the wet surface, bearing in mind that I hadn't watched any of the build-up.
Right. Well, it wasn't as entertaining as the deluge that hit the 24 hours of Nürburgring, but it was pretty wet out there. And right before the race started, Martin Brundle, I think, got a hold of Fernando Alonso. And he's like, what's it like out there? And he's like, it's like driving on ice. He says, does that make your day hard? He says, no, I love it. Anyone could win. That's literally what he said. And it was very prophetic in a way. But Brundle complained mightily about starting behind the safety car. And the sense that I got from Twitter was that the drivers would have been just as happy, most of them, except for probably Ricciardo, to have started without the safety car in front of them, thus guaranteeing some sort of massive carnage into Sandoval, and then an immediate safety car to rein it in.
Now, do you think the decision to start behind the safety car was anything to do with, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything to do with the family of Jules Bianchi filing another court case about the incident, claiming that it was an avoidable incident, and then there being a deluge of rain? Do you think Charlie Whiting and the FIA were ultra cautious?
Given that he is the person who was ultimately responsible as the safety delegate of the FIA for Suzuka, yeah, I'd say that was probably on everybody's mind a little bit. And Bianchi's family was there with a big group of youngsters that they sponsor karting. Just saying, it's the first race that they've even watched since his incident. Yeah, Chris.
I would also add that I noticed on the reconnaissance laps that the spray and the rooster tails were pretty bad, even on those low speed laps. So I don't really blame them for wanting to start it behind the safety car.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised it started behind the safety car, to be honest. I think the question for me was whether they left the safety car out too long. We've seen in the past that races behind the safety car, what will happen is the safety car comes in just as the track is ready for inters. We did actually get many laps of drivers using the wet tyres, and actually, as Hamilton proved, the wet tyres could go on well over 20 laps. I would have liked to have seen it come in a few laps earlier, but then given that Julian Palmer had his accident almost straight away, maybe it was a bit tricky. At the end of the day, though, these are the best drivers in the world and the best cars. I want to see them race on full wets.
Wait a minute. Are they, Anil?
Oh, no. You crashed on a straight. It's not even turning. He just goes straight.
He just...
Sorry, can I just add, actually, in response to that? It was really interesting that Martin Brundle was saying in commentary, oh, he spun it on the paint, that there's not enough grip on the paint or whatever. And I was just thinking, really, is that the case? And then you saw the replay, and as soon as he hit the zebra crossing, the car he just lost the car.
Yeah.
So it was great to see that, because I've never actually noticed it. I just assume it's something the commentators say, and I just kind of go, oh, yeah, I guess that's the case, but I don't really know because I don't race. But it was actually amazing to see, as soon as he hit that zebra crossing, the rear end just flew him into the wall.
It's something that drivers always have to watch out for on a damp or changing conditions on a track, especially if they're like on slicks when it's damp, because it's the painted sections that just retain a little bit more water and it doesn't have as much grip. And, you know, like Martin said, though, in that, the throttle pedal works both ways.
Go on. All right. I've got some from the chat room there. Reference the wet weather. Summers says that. Oh, I missed it. All right, yeah. Okay. Summers says, don't forget
your scroll
also have
works
to...
both ways.
Dude, just don't do it, right? So don't forget you also have two Donkey Kongs on the circuit, too, and their wet weather working group still haven't ironed out everything. Adam McDonald, it was far better idea to start behind the safety car. A crash would have been inevitable. I totally agree with Matt. And then another anonymous with all of those numbers, Jeremy Clarkson tweet summed it up. Hurry, hurry. If you want to see some cars driving very slowly in single file and drizzle, tune into the Monaco GP now.
Adam McDonald, that's a blast from the past. Super nice to see you. And I've just logged into the chat room as well to see how well attended it is. And very, very happy with that.
I'm not sure I agree with this guy with Clarkson's tweet, because I thought it was good. It was proper good.
We just spoke about Julian Palmer, but there was another driver who had a bit of an incident in the wet, and he was Kimi Raikkonen, who actually has a very poor record at Monaco since his comeback. He's really struggled, but yeah, another incident, and that was really frustrating. And that was whilst the track was actually drying as well, but to lose it at the hairpin, and then to kind of wedge Grosjean into the corner, it was entertaining, but...
Cool. We'll get to the crashes at the end in the crashes section. The first thing that jumped up our throats was a team order. A team order from Mercedes. Lewis is faster than you, or some such call. And Nico obligingly pulls over. And I was very surprised in race to see that happen, to see Nico comply so much. And then we got reports that he had a brake problem, which might not turned out to be super accurate. What do we make of that, Matt?
Well, he might have had a problem at the start with his brake temperatures. After all, it was raining and wet and the track was very cold. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if that was an issue. But more to the point, and the reason why I queried about the setup change on Hamilton versus Rosberg, is because if they were running two different setups, it may very well have been that Hamilton was able to switch his tires on. And that would be the tire temperatures would have been something Rosberg was struggling with. If those tires weren't switched on, the way he's driving made perfect sense to me, because it would have been literally like driving on ice the whole time. And it just, say what you will about him, he's a better driver than he showed the pace of that car today. So there was something not entirely right about it, and it affected his ability to extract performance from the car. Yeah, Chris?
I wouldn't say that Hamilton was able to switch the tires on faster, because we saw that once he got onto the ultrasofts, he really struggled to get the temperature in them for a few laps. Every time the virtual safety car came out, he would struggle on the restart because he wasn't getting the temperature in. I'm not 100% on whether there was an issue with the car, because I've read the press release on it, and it might be a brake issue, it might be something else. They don't really know, and I just think that it's generally those kind of conditions where Nico's not really able to think on his feet as much and doesn't react to the conditions as well as Lewis.
Okay, so I'll make the case that this is Rosberg on just not a good day for Rosberg. Now, Rosberg has a lot of good days where he's very fast. There's a lot of track conditions that suit him. There's a lot of race conditions that suit him. He's a good driver. I'm not taking that away from him. But Andrew Benson made a great case that it was a sort of circular crescendo pattern, which sort of Matt alluded to, which is you weren't heating the tyres, therefore you're not heating the brakes, they're not working properly, and one leads to the other, making it worse and worse. And Andrew Benson was sort of detailing this out. Now, Rosberg came out and said, well, I don't know, I can't really explain the lack of pace today. But then he came out and said, I wasn't comfortable with the car and I couldn't really push it because I thought I'd hit the barriers if I did. Kind of answering his own question, which is that he wasn't comfortable with the car, wasn't comfortable with the setup, wasn't comfortable in the rain, it might be fair to say, and he wasn't pushing the car, therefore not getting the temperatures. So it could have just been an unfortunate set of circumstances that culminated in being a lap down at the end of the race.
The thing you got to remember about Nico is that he is amazing when he's had time to really perfect the car. When the car is there for him, he's utterly dominant, like we saw in Austria last year, in Spain last year, and like what we've been seeing at the beginning of this season, where he's really been able to hone in the car to what he wants it to do. But in Monaco, it's the first time that they've had a wet Monaco track, and so they've really got to think on their feet. In a way, you can say it kind of separates the men from the boys. I'm not going to say Nico is, you know, a boy in this scenario, but certainly he isn't able to react to a changing track.
Well, see, I'm going to disagree, because I know that others have said that, you know, the struggle with the brake temperatures and the tire temperatures, but it's also down to a driving style. Hamilton has always liked a more oversteery car, which does work the tires harder. And sometimes that can be a problem for him, because he'll experience either graining or deg, where Rosberg doesn't. But making the car fast, Rosberg in quali was about 0.2 off of Hamilton. And when we've seen Hamilton ahead of Rosberg, that's the difference between them. When we saw them, we saw Hamilton immediately put, it was almost a second a lap on Rosberg once he was let past. And that's just not the true difference between them when both of them have the cars working. I think Rosberg's setup contributed to brake and tire issues that then just hamstrung him for the whole rest of the race, if you'll pardon my saying hamstrung, but anyway.
I just want to say that that race for me was a reminder that the best driver on the grid in on full wets is Lewis Hamilton.
And yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to
disagree. Which is a shame, actually, that we don't have more races with full wets, because I don't think he's that great on inters, but on full wets, he's absolutely incredible. Well, and he showed it again.
Well, as much as I would love to just agree with you blindly as a fanatic fanboy, Perez also put in a good and quick stint on the wets. Now, he's a driver that I've always thought of as raw talent and raw quickness, if not a little bit of a maybe a character issue. I don't know. But do you put him in that same bracket, Anil?
Well, I've never really thought about it. I was genuinely really shocked to see how quick the Force Indies were. Given how small their team is, you would think that they would only be quick on certain tracks that flattered the Mercedes power unit.
Yeah.
In those conditions, I really thought they'd struggle to get anywhere near the top 10.
So is it Perez? So, is it Sergio?
Well, he just drove an incredible race. And it's as Matt said earlier, when he was talking about Rosberg, Perez just had the confidence in his car to push. And he was able to take that through all weekend. And Hülkenberg was fairly quick as well. But yeah, for me, Perez was actually the driver of the race. He was absolutely unbelievable. But his pace at the beginning was unreal.
I have to agree with Anil. I'd say that Force India's pit stops were, you know, down to a T. They, I think, pitted Perez for the Inters a lap later than most others. And so that helped him jump a couple of cars. And he also pitted for slicks earlier than Rosberg and Vettel, which helped him jump them as well. And to be on the soft tyre as well, it turned out to be a fantastic race tyre. We knew it was going to do the distance. It was a case of whether the speed was going to be there, and it really was. It was an incredible performance.
T, anything from the chat room, buddy?
Loads. Almost too much to keep up with. Fortunately, I'm very good at this, as you've all seen so far today. Right, Adam McDonald jumped in where there's a very similar case to Silverstone in 2015 when, by not going quickly enough, a Merc driver did not have the brake or tyre temperature. So no temperature meant no bravery. Rosberg, for the first time, looked like he knew he was protecting a world championship lead. Fortis jumped in and said the Rosberg problem, he suggested it was because he was in the wrong engine mode, so he just moved over. Anonymous, lots of numbers, suggested team orders from Merc always favour number 44. And Craig Ollison asked, are there any Merc tinfoil hat theories? Was it a gift for Lewis?
Well, I mean, the tinfoil hat theories have been the other way, really, haven't they? That Mercedes are crushing Lewis Hamilton. But I've really got the theory, Matt. I know you want to come in, but I've just got the theory that I've always had, which is Mercedes favour Lewis Hamilton. Yes, I think they do favour Lewis Hamilton. They see him as the number one driver. They see him as their golden boy. And I was talking with the editor of a large Formula One website, and we were talking about download figures. Now, we had a slight dip, for example, this week with the tech time over the Spanish Grand Prix review, which saw a big spike. And we were talking about how race weekends get more downloads than non-race weekends. And if Hamilton wins, downloads take a big, big spike. Because Hamilton is Hollywood, he's cash money, and Mercedes aren't stupid, and Mercedes are a business. And I really think they want a 4-time world champion, a 5-time world champion, if they can get it, a 6-time world champion. I think Rosberg being in the lead through a set of genuine Lewis Hamilton faults has been a big thorn in their side. And that's why they were so passionate when they were talking about it not being a conspiracy, because they were like, no, really, guys, we're doing everything we can to get a Lewis world championship again.
No, I think you would be, I think they strive to make things fair between the drivers, but if you ask them if they could write the script,
yeah,
then Lewis would, then what we're looking at right now would pretty much be a dream Mercedes script. Lewis Hamilton coming from behind, winning late in the season with other teams actually fighting for the win, so they don't look like it's just their series.
Going over to Tony again, but a chat room. Chat room. Yeah. I'm just going to say, right, the podcast is a safe place to listen to and everything like that. The live stream might not always be. And the chat room, I would suggest, is not a safe for work thing that you would want on your computer screen. Be nice. Be nice, guys. Let's be the nice place in the internet.
It's getting pretty savage in there today. People are passionate.
Yes.
Yeah, one more comment, though, before we move on. Craig Allison jumped in and said, Dr. Z said the team is now balanced in the old...
Yes. Oh, my God. I'll come back to you, T, but did you hear that comment? Like, if he didn't mean it to come across like that, he'd sounded like a Bond villain for all the world. Yes, the situation in the team is now balanced. If he didn't mean for it to come across like that, oh, my lordy. Yeah, it was pretty incredible. It was as if he may as well have said, Lewis has been pretty bummed out the last few races, and now he's happy again.
So are you suggesting that Red Bull's bad pit stop was because he was in there, you know, pressing the wrong buttons and getting the wrong tyres ready, Spanners? Is that your hunch?
Oh, my goodness. That was absolutely epic, that pit stop.
I can see him on the phone to Dietrich Mateschitz. Dietrich, it would be fantastic if you could mess up the pit stop for us.
Okay, so I think the real battle that you would want to focus in on, Matt, knowing you and knowing what you like, is the battle up front between Lewis Hamilton and Ricciardo. By the way, fantastic driving from both drivers. Just fantastic. Daniel Ricciardo is an out-and-out racer, isn't he? He really is a fantastic driver.
See, and this shows how little you truly know me. Because that's not exactly...
No. That's what I'm saying is, despite that, the thing that would interest you was the interplay between the tyres and strategy.
Yeah. It does. I mean, hats off to the driver. I mean, first of all, Ricciardo deserved to win. It was his race. He pitted with enough time. He should have won the race.
Yeah.
It was an astonishing drive by Hamilton to use those tires in the way that he did. And Chris pointed out earlier, one of the most interesting things to come out of the strategy was the fact that Hamilton was on the ultra softs and Ricciardo was on the supers. Now, the thing is, the supers, and as soon as I saw that he was on it, this already, I knew it was going to be fascinating because the supers have a lower working range. They get hot, they get usable quicker temperature wise than the ultras do. And they should also theoretically last longer, but just not quite be as fast in the beginning. But the conditions they put them on in through all of that, out the window. I mean, they would have had really zero data to go on in terms of how the tires were going to be used by the driver. So it was very much down to them in the car being able to sense what was going on, as long with the engineers looking at the data. But the real point I want to make is the ultras are no different to the supers.
Hardly.
If we look at the job Pirelli did, there was like no difference. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the other point I was going to make as well was that we kind of saw that the ultrasoft wasn't really working the way the teams expected to, because they had to do two warm-up laps in qualifying and in practice to get the best out of the tire, which just kind of goes to show that the ultrasoft is not really different to last year's supersoft, and it will do roughly the same distance as the super soft. I'm not kind of basing that off of this weekend, because it was, you know, very odd condition, so I don't think you can really compare the two. But the ultra soft is behaving in a way that I don't think a lot of us really expected it to. And what as well was that Ricardo's tires were a little bit scrubbed. They were like three laps old when he put them on in the race, so I think he'd used them in qualifying, which probably in the rain, on a damp track, probably would have given him more grip initially when he came onto the circuit than a fresh set.
Yeah, and they would have gotten up to temperature quicker, which every time there was a virtual safety car meant we were going to have some excitement with Hamilton trying to defend until he got his tires up and rolling again. But let's also talk about the extremes versus the enters, because did you see much of a difference between the two times? Because Lewis basically said there's no difference.
Oh, you know? guys, I've just got to stop you very quickly, because Let's just cut to the chase. Instead of walking through Tony, let's get the man himself on, Matt Summerfield. Matt, we're not going to keep you for too long, but do you think you could just give us a quick explanation of why the Ultrasofts didn't seem to be that much different to the Supers?
It was all down to temperatures at the end of the day. So obviously with the Supersofts working in a different temperature range to the Ultrasofts, so obviously the temperatures at the track, and obviously the being a damp track, it was completely green again. I think that just is what made the two compounds play out differently to one another, or should have made them play out differently to one another, but sort of converged.
So do you expect then, if the Ultrasofts are coming to Canada, right?
Yes.
So in Canada, we're going to see a much quicker tyre that lasts significantly less as long. Good English there. Oh, you've cut out Summers. Summers, we didn't hear any of your response.
Did?
No, it looks like you're having some technical issues there. I caught you saying yes, vaguely. So Summers, we're going to let you go because you are cutting out of the Skype call. And we hope to catch you very soon for some 2017 regulations chat. I'm going to assume that he's heard me and try and hang up, but I am struggling to figure out how Skype works and how to get rid of it. Remove from group. There we go. That'll do it. So we probably will see a much truer reflection if what Summers is saying is true.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In Canada, if
yeah,
there's
but
no rain.
See, now this really frustrates me because one thing I would have asked him immediately is, well, explain to me Ricardo's second session qualifying time on the super soft tire as opposed to the ultra soft.
Someone's had a comment earlier on. He actually said he's asked Pirelli for the ultra soft working range temperature, but he's had no answer back yet. So when he gets that, hopefully he'll be able to shed some light.
Perhaps they haven't figured it out yet.
I'm gonna
get the words out of my mouth.
I'm gonna try
Q2 time. The Ultrasoft was only about half a second quicker than the Supersoft this weekend, partially because, you know, the circuit's so short that the advantage is less over a single lap. So I'd say maybe that was a contributor to it. What was interesting was it was only 0.3 off Hamilton in that session, though.
Well, this is my point. I mean, either the car was wicked faster or the tires aren't as different as they'd like, as they ought to be to make them strategically interesting.
Okay, so speaking of strategically interesting, explain to me. So let me get this right. Hamilton skips the interstage and says, I can hang on here. I can hang on here in wets. Hamilton has said, although I cannot remember where, that he doesn't like the inters at all in general. So it's hardly surprising that he chose, and that was his call, wasn't it, to stay out on the wets and basically earn himself a pit stop and go straight onto slicks. Am I right so far? Ricardo has to pit for inters and comes out behind Hamilton, quickly catches him, but cannot pass. Matt?
There was about a 10-second gap from Ricardo to Hamilton, and everyone was coming in for inters. Ricardo box, and there was about 10 seconds and Hamilton stayed out. And in that subsequent lap, they wanted him to come in for enters. And that's where all the really entertaining stuff happened. So it would have been immediately him saying, nope, I'm not coming in. I think it's going to dry. Is what I've seen reported in the news media.
What was really strange about that decision was that when Lewis was on the wets on the drying track, he wasn't actually driving in the wet patches that often. I don't know if it's because it's such a slow circuit that the tyres just were staying together. But it wasn't as though he was struggling to keep the tyres in shape. I mean, the tyres looked okay.
No, yeah, they did.
In the final stages of that stint, just before he put on the slicks, only then was he driving in the wet patches. I think the crucial thing, though, was that there was just not enough grip kind of anywhere on the circuit. You know, when you compare the wet tire and the inter tire wasn't exactly, you know, a big pace advantage over the wet tire. I think it was, you know, the fact that Ricciardo's tires were fresher that he caught him so quickly.
But it was advantage enough because Ricciardo, he made up, what was it, 10 seconds on Hamilton on those enters. Now, granted, Hamilton would have been, you know, managing his tires to the best of his ability to not use them up before the dry line had come in enough for him to go on to slicks, because otherwise he's blown the whole strategic opportunity he almost created for himself. And for me, the whole drama of the race was like, is there going to be a dry line before he runs out of tire? That was just epic to watch.
Okay, so let's shift this along a bit to that pit stop. And the best gif I saw was a picture of a man kicking a car windscreen on top of it as it was leaving Monaco, and people saying that was Ricciardo on Christian Horner's car. But a person in this chat room has recently become emotionally invested, Tony Thunderbeast Barnard, not an avid F1 fan, a great podcaster, not an avid F1 fan, decided to pick a guy. And Tony, last week in Spain, you were like, I've got my man, I've got my guy, Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah, he's just awesome, right? I thought, yeah, I'll invest. And then between that and now that we do this, I make notes and I pick things out. And yeah, I'm right into it now. And it was super exciting for me. And I was thinking, yeah, he's going to bag a win here. This is awesome. And then they come into the pits, right? And I just see what's unfolding before my eyes. And I'm struggling to keep this safe for work. But I'll hold it together. Don't panic. Yeah. He's getting a bit wide-eyed there because I do get a bit. And I was just like, what are you doing? Get the tires bolted onto the flaming car. What's wrong with you?
I couldn't believe it.
And then the commentators were excellent because they were telling us about Hamilton coming around as well and whether they were going to meet on when they exit the pit lane. And it was just, the suspense was unbelievable. I was loving it. I was texting him during and I was just thinking, I would tell him like, it's fantastic. I was right into it. My heart was in my mouth for about a minute. It was awesome, but not awesome in a way. You know what I mean?
So now that you've got a guy, you've cursed him and he lost that. Matt, how forgivable is that argument? I know they're saying it's very cramped in the pit lane.
Well, it's not just cramped, but the pit wall is in a completely different place. There's much greater distance between everything and everything's just a lot more difficult.
It's multi-level, isn't it? So they said,
yeah, it is.
They basically got the engineers up on top, up above the pit lane, then you've got the garage, and then the tires are below. So you've got
out the back.
So you've got these.
Yeah. So it's not really a pit wall. It's a pit first floor.
So it wasn't so much that they got the wrong tires. It's that they changed their strategy. They were gonna go out on softs,
and they changed it to the supers at the last second, and they were out the back and they had to run and go get them, and the timing was just not right.
Do you think if Hamilton had gone to super soft, they'd have stuck with their softs? Was it, what I'm asking is, were they reacting to Hamilton going onto the ultra softs? Because I was really kind of like thinking, oh man, that maybe that means he's stopping again.
Yeah, I figured they were going to go one step harder. So I think that might be the case, Banners. They saw what Lewis was doing and said, okay, let's go one step harder. So let's change from the softs to the super softs. But I mean, it wasn't Danny's decision. He was just told to come in. I imagine it's a bit of a strange feeling when you're leading the most prestigious Grand Prix to be sat in a pit lane with no tyres.
I think
in those conditions, though, you kind of just go on what you know is going to work for your car. So I'm not entirely convinced that they were reacting to Lewis. I think they maybe realised that the Super Soft would have been a better tyre for them if Tony. They could make it through the distance.
T. Right, chat room, yeah. I laughed at it, but I don't know why, because I'm pretty annoyed about the whole situation. Generic F1 fan, it's the best thing he saw on the internet was that Red Bull give you wings but not tyres. another anonymous.
That happens after every incident involving Red Bull, and it never gets old. Like, that meme is just repeated for everything. It's fantastic.
It's an older meme, but it checks out.
It's awesome.
Anonymous 751 says, "Come on, Ricciardo's way faster than Hamilton. It was the pit stop that gave him the win, and the tire issue is rubbish. Ricciardo is a better and faster driver."
Now, go on, Anil, unmuting.
Okay,
though. Yeah,
I have a question to anyone that watched that with live timings, which is probably just Matt.
Yeah.
When Hamilton came into the pits, he was just ahead of Ricciardo by less than a second.
Yeah.
He went to Ultrasofts.
Yeah.
Ricciardo lost about 8 seconds in his pit stop.
Right.
Yet he emerged from the pits only just behind Lewis.
It's almost like you weren't listening to Summers. Track was cold, and it was still damp. His tires weren't up to operating temperature, so his first lap was, again, you know, how many times have I said it today? Probably too many. But his first couple of laps until the tires were hot were again, they weren't working properly. So he had much more limited traction, and he was facing a similar problem, I guess, that Rosberg had, but he was able to get around it efficiently enough.
So presumably Ricciardo's in lap was 6 or 7 seconds faster than Hamilton's first lap on those ultrasofts, which is incredible when you think about it, because it means that, you know, they fluffed Ricciardo's pit stop. But if it was just a 10-second pit stop instead of a 12-second one, he probably still would have emerged as the leader.
Yeah, well, let's talk about last year as Hamilton hit the pit exit line, whoever went right by him. You know, I mean, like, it comes down to those margins in this sport, and it always does. It's one of the things that makes it so much fun to watch. It's just the tiny things, but the biggest differences.
Well, one thing as well you got to remember is that pit lane exit is so long in Monaco, and of course that's all still soaking wet because none of the drivers have been going over it. So his tires would have been so cold, so wet. When he initially came out of the pits, that it probably isn't going anywhere near full throttle all the way up to the top of the hill at Massenet.
Yeah, and
I think he was barely getting full throttle anywhere on the lap, to be honest.
And I want to point out that Summers mentioned earlier that it was Hamilton's call to stay out to gamble on that dry line appearing, which let's A, call it the gamble that it was, and B, say, yeah, made him look pretty genius for doing it. But the team picked the tires. The team put him on the ultras. They decided that was the best tire to go with.
All right, chat room again, guys.
Go ahead.
Yeah, right. This is important, though, because they're getting at it. There's a bit of an argument going on. Forrest says to Anil, Lewis lost time when he ran wide and cut the corner exiting the swimming pool. Adam McDonald jumped in and says, incredible in-lap for Ricciardo as well. Summers then agrees. Anonymous 751, he really doesn't like Hamilton. 44 is slow. Without the fastest car, he would be last.
Well, I think without a car, anyone would be last. I think that's kind of the way it
except
works.
Except all the times when he wasn't in the fastest car. And
yeah.
I just wanted that
2009.
Ricciardo wasn't the only driver that had an incredible in-lap. Alonso as well did two personal best, and that jumped him up to fifth.
Can we move on to the crashes and the podium, Matthew? Are we well placed?
Yeah, I think we skipped the whole. And I looked. You know what? I said it was a blown chicane. He was investigated.
Oh,
before.
Christ! Because, oh, yeah, sugar. Yeah.
Because, but you know what? It wasn't. They actually investigated him for not leaving a car's width on Ricciardo when he squeezed him.
Okay, so can we just recap that for anyone who's it's not fresh in his mind? Coming out of the tunnel into that chicane, Ricciardo was trailing Hamilton, not attempting an overtake, I believe. Hamilton brakes, doesn't make the corner, runs off to the chicane, and then it actually is slow to pull away, even even then. Ricciardo attempts to go round what would be the outside into the next corner, darts frantically to the left and complains about getting cut off. So we assumed that he was being investigated for cutting the corner and gaining an advantage. So the two ways he could gain an advantage were to prevent an overtake, and there wasn't an overtake happening, or increasing the gap, which the gap came down quite dramatically. So we thought that was a no-brainer. So they were investigating the leaving the car's width rule, which is very poignant after Spain. And I'm sure the chat room is going to have stuff to say about this.
Yeah, well, they investigated it, and it turns out, you know, he left a car's width. So that was the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
It was quite aggressive, though. It wasn't.
No, I'm sorry. It wasn't.
It really wasn't.
I actually find it ridiculous that they even put the message up on the screen to say they were investigating it, because, you know, it takes 5 seconds to look at the replay. Hamilton's actually moving left when Ricciardo gets his front wing alongside Hamilton's rear wheels. It looked a lot more dramatic on the live feed because the back end of Ricciardo's car stepped out.
Yeah.
Even when I saw that, and I think Martin Brundle said, "Oh, actually, I think Hamilton's been a bit naughty there." Yeah. Then you watch the onboard, and it was not even worth talking about, as far as I'm concerned.
So here's how it played out to me. Here's where I have sympathy with Chris, which is right. In the live, it looked like he'd shut the door and closed it off, and Ricciardo had done the valiant thing and avoided the crash. But when they showed the replay, they said, "Here's the rule," because this has been irritating me on forums. I'm going to get quite angry about this. People keep going on about a significant portion of the car, as if that means you have to have half the car alongside. So let's clarify something, and Matt will nod along if I'm getting it right, and you can correct people in forums. They said in the regs, for the removal of any doubt, a significant part of the car is if any portion of the front wing is alongside the rear tyres, Matt. Have I got that right? That's right.
And you've nailed it.
Now, here's the other thing that people seem to be missing in forums is, that rule only applies on straights before the braking zone. The rules are different in a corner. You don't necessarily have to leave a car's width. There are its own rules for that. So here, as long as he left the car's width, he was fine. So when I saw the front wing come up alongside the back in the replay, I went, uh-oh, yeah, this is it. He's clipped him off. But actually, Hamilton never moved into that car width zone at all.
Yeah, which is, of course, why no further action was taken.
Oh, no, fair enough. But the internet, do you know, I was... I was lying in
it's
bed
funny
for
you
half
say that, Spanish, because yeah. I saw a lot of people say, "Oh, well, he cut the chicane. You know, he should be given a penalty for that." But I remember when Hamilton and Rosberg were fighting in Canada a couple of years ago, and Rosberg cut the chicane a couple of times. And I think the way it was handled was three. It's like three strikes and you're out.
Really?
It wasn't as if Hamilton did that lap after lap after lap. The rule, well, the way they enforce it is, if you cut it three times in a row, that's when you have to give the position back. It wasn't as if Hamilton was deliberately cheating. I think the whole thing was overblown.
So I think what we're seeing is a lot of hurt from the Spanish Grand Prix still, where people feel like Hamilton dived up the inside.
Well, I just love how any mistake a driver makes is somehow a deliberate ploy now these days to either gain or maintain a position. It's like a driver can do no wrong ever.
It's the equivalent of saying every foul in football is a yellow or red card.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. It's a racing incident. It's in the name. Don't have to blame certain drivers. Just let them race. If you're not happy to see them make mistakes and collide, then don't watch Formula One.
What I absolutely loved about their battle for the lead, though, was just like any single time they had to go offline, the rear end would just snap straight away, and they looked like absolute gods driving those cars because they looked like a massive, massive handful to drive, and it's just the best time to be watching Formula One is when cars are doing that.
Stop picking your nose, Chris.
I'm scratching it. Can I not
I'm
have
scratching
a scratchy
it.
Nose? Jesus Christ. Can you not just go through one podcast without sniping me for something?
Well, if you've got a mic and a pop shield, you could just go down, pick it, so no one can see, and then come
week.
Back up. Tricks of the trade,
kid. Very poor.
Sorry, I've been a lone parent all week. So when I see a young kid such as yourself picking his nose, I can't help it. I have to jump in. By the way, next time I compiled a list of things I did before you started school. But we'll save that for another episode because we are running short on time. The list does include obtain and use an HGV license. frighteningly. So, Matt, can we move on to the crashes? Because we are running short of time. No, Tony wants to say some stuff.
One quick one. It's important. Vortex Motio, or Ken's been on. He's been on. He said that he's so jazzed that Anil is on.
Yeah.
This one for you, Anil.
We all are.
It's really weird not being the youngest person here.
Yeah, you used to get the abuse, didn't you, last year? Sorry, yeah. Yeah, now Chris and Ryan Ferris of E-Radio Show, they all get it now. Is that all from the chat for now?
You said you're running short of time, so let's move it along.
There were 48 crashes this race. The one I want to talk about first is, here we go.
Oh no, you hit your buddy.
Don't hit your teammate. Don't hit your teammate when there's a team order. Don't just ram it up the inside. What are you doing, Ericsson? You complete waste of an F1 seat.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen somebody do in a Formula One car.
I wanted to call it Monaco 16, Squabble of the Toddlers.
Oh my God, it was...
Because that's really what it was like. It was like two toddlers in a Formula One car bashing each other.
Felipe,
The best part was when they brought Ericsson in to retire him, and Martin Brundle just said, it looks like they're retiring Ericsson. And I didn't know if they meant career-wise or just for the race. I don't know if it was deliberate.
Ericsson, really making Maldonado look good since...
Maldonado was in the pit lane. He was there all weekend trying to find the drive. I wonder...
Do you think... Because we saw a couple of incidents there. We saw Danny Kvyat hit Magnussen there, and we saw, obviously, the Saubers come together. Do you think part of it is they remember Bianchi's move, where he sort of came on the inside of Kobayashi, managed to hit bang wheel twice to nudge the Caterham out of the way, and then go through? And they're going, I fancy that.
It's brilliant, because, obviously, Bianchi did it. One of the few overtakes you see at that corner, and he's basically considered a hero for it. But I remember Perez did the same to Raikkonen in 2013.
In the chicane, that was at the chicane.
And had to retire.
Yeah.
And Trulli did the same to Chandock in 2010, and he basically went over Chandock's car. Ericsson tried it.
It depends.
As silly as the move looks, though, I think the team were probably more annoyed at Nasr because they were telling him to move out the way.
Yeah, I'm going to do that, because how could you not mention Red Bull? Was it the Hungaroring? Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel? Again, where Vettel thought he'd been given permission to go through and just drove right through the middle of Webber's car and took them both out?
Oh, that's your memory playing up. That's Turkey, not Hungary.
Turkey,
oh,
okay.
That was Turkey, sure. 2010.
Oh,
okay. There's one thing. Yes, they might have been annoyed, but it's one thing saying, no, I don't agree with that order, and hanging it out. And it's quite another to T-bone the other very expensive Formula One car of your teammate for a team that is being talked about not finishing the season. I think that's unforgivable what Ericsson did. Move along, son. Wasn't the only crash we had, though. We had quite a lot. Raikkonen managed to crash on the slowest turn in F1.
Good.
By himself.
By himself. All on his own.
What's extraordinary about
it looks
that crash
so dumb.
What was extraordinary is that he makes a mistake at the hairpin. He doesn't stop the car until after the tunnel. And there's this, 40 seconds of just Raikkonen having a right mare. So first he hits the wall. Then he wedges Grosjean into the corner because his wing is stuck under the car. He then reverses out of that position, at which point you're thinking, oh, he's going to, pull over to the left. And then he starts to go through the tunnel as cars are going past him at, 150, 160 miles an hour. And you're just wondering, why didn't he stop the car before? Oh. There is a theory going around that he was trying to get closer to the boats to have a drink.
I thought you were going to say, why does he carry on in F1? Why does he bother? It's done.
He's just cruising down there, spewing out debris, wing mirrors, fuzzy dice, all of that. I'm just thinking, how selfish can you be?
Yeah, and I think the marshals were trying to stop him before the tunnel.
They were all waving at him, saying, stop, what are you doing? And he's practically mounting his wing.
Oh, Tony, you've missed a chance to say that they were saying, what were you doing? And he was saying, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing.
Trumpets.
Yeah, My personal favorite comment on that was, I think it was Will Buxton interviewing Grosjean after the race, and they said, "So, Roman, tell us about your race." And he just looked at him and he went, "Kimi."
Nice.
And walked off.
That's nice.
Dropped the mic and that was it.
obviously, we covered Julian Palmer earlier, but yeah, an awful lot. I thought for a little while, I thought my bet of Harry Anto 20-1 getting a point was on. I thought it was on for a little while, but it wasn't. So yeah, really nice high attrition race. Do we mind if we move on? Because I don't think we've got time to cover all of that any other business, Matt. But do you want to pick out a couple of bits of it? We can talk about the virtual safety car next week when we talk about the regs.
Yeah, we can do that. I think Alonso's finish was really very, very good. He drove an excellent race. And the double points for McLaren, that's first time this season?
Yes.
They did it in Russia.
Second time. It's worth mentioning that JB had a kind of mistimed first pit stop, which put him on the back foot for the rest of the race, really.
Oh, that's the reason this week. Okay,
it is.
That's
yes.
Great. I'll tune in for the reason next week.
Well, it's interesting because we always say he's the one that always gets the decision right, but the pit stops did not go his way.
Tony?
Yeah, just the last one from Vortex Motio. What shall Max Verstappen's new name be? He's offered up Mad Max or Maldonado Verstappen. Personally, I'm going for Crashy McCrashface.
Yes!
Ooh, very nice. I like Verstappen myself.
Verstappen, yes.
And I'll say a comment we got on the Facebook page. I'll take this opportunity to plug the Facebook page. Search Missed Apex Podcast. You unfortunately have to put all three search terms to get into there. There are 89 people now in there. You could be the 90th. And I'm trying to make that. Let's make that the nice place to go and talk about F1 on Facebook. Anyone can post. That's fine. But just looking at the vitriol and headache of going to any other F1 group, let's try and make this the nice one. And there was a comment from Jonathan Wiltshire that said Button made his signature wet move, pit early and hope for the best. It's worked maybe 1% of the times, and he's claiming that he's the best at reading those situations. I'm sure that made spanners chuckle. Yes, it
I
very
want
much
to say,
did.
Sergio Perez now has more podiums since he left McLaren than McLaren have had since he left.
Woof.
That's gotta hurt. To the comment I was just talking about, I would say that I think that tactic works exactly 50% of the time. Biggest myth in F1 is that Jenson Button is the master of changeable conditions. Carry on with your list.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's pretty much it though.
Oh, good.
Because we're going to talk about the safety car next week, and then what, Chris?
Well, I was going to say a Hülkenberg pipping Rosberg at the line.
Yeah, very good.
Because that last lap for them was horrible because it just started to chuck it down. They were tippy-toeing their way through that final lap. And I don't know what happened to Nico at the final stretch. Did he just get a poor run off the corner? Or
he was on. His tyres were a grade softer than Hülkenberg's. So he lost about 5 seconds to Hülkenberg. Oh, he was incredibly slow. So for that entire lap, they missed it on the TV feed, but you could see Hülkenberg was right up behind him. And then out of the final corner, he just had no grip.
Okay.
Because it would have been cold tyres again.
It would. Oh, yeah, that's true. It's a little bit embarrassing, really.
That's good news for Spanners, because I think for the championship, that puts Lewis within a win.
Closes them right up.
Well, do you know what it does do?
24 points.
Do you know what it does do? If you were going to be a crazy conspiracy theorist, it's made up more than 14 points, which would have been the 7 points that Lewis lost by not winning in Spain and 7 points for a 1-2 Mercedes finish with Hamilton in front in Monaco. So for anyone who thinks that Mercedes favour Hamilton and we're going to punish Nico for Spain, maths.
I just think that's kind of funny.
I'm sure it's coincidence.
I disagree with
you. I'm sure
it's
coincidence. I'm just asking questions. See, that's a good argument tactic. Only say stuff when you're sure. And if you're not sure, phrase it in a question. And then when people disagree with you, you just go, I'm just asking questions. I'm just striving for the truth. Why do you hate the truth?
Just spitballing, man.
We've got a pretty exciting championship on our hands now, points-wise. Lewis is now within a win. You think Ricciardo has basically lost out on 2 wins in a row, and he was not happy after the race.
Nope, no, he wasn't. We'll get to that.
So he's lost 20 points through the team's kind of strategic errors in the last two races. It's pretty close at the top.
Yeah, much closer than it's been the past couple of years.
Yeah, I was just going to, with Red Bull's package at the moment, they are set for an incredible, you know, rest of the season where they can really take the fight to Mercedes.
I think that's taking it far too far. Far too far. They're not going to take it championship-wise. They might take it two or three wins.
Singapore.
Crazy things have happened.
There are going to be plenty of circuits that work well for them.
Singapore will be fun to watch.
Singapore and Hungary.
All right, kids, let's move on to the podium. And haven't we had just a run of stroppy Monaco podiums? Before we go on to the podium, I'd just like to do some listener feedback. And I know Tony's going to line up a comment of the week later, and I'm stalling for time because I'm darned if I can find the review I wanted to read.
I've got one I'd like to read.
Go for it.
Is it the same one you were going to?
No, it's not. I know it's not.
Okay. So THG3 titled his reviewer A Different Approach to F1. And he said, very entertaining podcast on F1. Good discussions on the tech and race reports. And can I get this, guys? Spanners offers a good comedy value. And what I was thinking when I read that is, like, Spanners, did you get your mum to write that for you or what?
So you saw that as a good thing. I saw that. Thank you very, very much, by the way, for the review. We could do with iTunes reviews. Search Missed Apex. It's the one by Spanners Ready. We are syndicated on other feeds, but please do it on by Spanners Ready. I read that as, hey, really good, interesting, intelligent stuff. And the little clown on the side, Spanners, offers the odd giggle. I took that to heart. I took it that way.
Oh, so you thought they were laughing at you? I thought he meant like laughing with you, as if you were hilarious, which is what confused me.
No, I think he was calling me the comedy Dave to Matt's Chris Moyles.
Well, that makes more sense actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anil Palmer's got to shoot. Where can people catch up with you on the internet, Anil?
Find me on Twitter at AnilP228. For all things F1 related.
Yeah, that's worth a follow. Trust me, kids. Follow this man. This man is going to go places. We love you, Anil Palmer. We'll see you soon.
See you guys later.
Now, the iTunes review I wanted to read was from Irish Boar, because I got it wrong last week, and he urged me to read it out. It says, an antidote, not an anecdote, an antidote to the post-race Sunday night comedown. Often hilarious, always informative, running jokes, it's the wittertainment of the world that is F1, full stop. And hello to Jason. So Irish Boar is saying hello to Jason. And yes, if you want to put a message in your iTunes review that we will read out, feel free and crack on and do it that way. Anything else, T?
No.
So we're onto the podium, and Daniel Ricciardo has some very, very harsh words in his car. Do you think he might regret attacking the team so strongly in his passive-aggressive way on the car radio, and then in the press afterwards, in the press pin? Pen.
I mean, I think you might regret some of the words he used, but, I mean, some of that could be forgiven, because on the commentary and that, people made a good point that it's all the adrenaline's got flowing, you know, some of that can be excused, you know, because you're not thinking straight, you're just fuming and just... You're just in a different state of mind. You're straight into the press, aren't you? You don't get a debrief. You don't get a chance to calm down. They're on you like flies around the proverbial.
He has every right to be upset, you know, so I can understand where he's coming from. And it's just, you know, a message to the team. Don't mess this up again, you know, because we've already lost two wins because of it.
Has no one learnt anything from the fable of Paul de Resta? Has no one learnt that if you slag off your team, if you give them a lot of eventually they are just going to drop you? Ricciardo needs to watch out, because, yes, Red Bull definitely made a mistake, and it's absolutely unforgivable, but it happens. Mistakes like that will happen a percentage of the time. When a new situation arises like that, that was probably the first time that kind of situation has come up, mistakes do happen. And he was savage. He was absolutely savage what he was saying in the press conference. T.
Anonymous in the chat room said, yeah, but after all of that, he did get a chance to meet Justin Bieber. So,
yeah, definitely. We'll get to that in a second, because that was a little weird, wasn't it? That was a little weird. But Ricciardo, he had a real proper strop on. Now, I would just like people who don't like Lewis Hamilton, and there are things to not like about Lewis Hamilton, to just imagine, listen back to the radio, listen to Ricardo in the pen, and put those words into the mouth of Lewis Hamilton. How do you think the internet would have reacted then?
My mind is incapable of understanding such logic.
The internet would, you know, is a horrible place sometimes. I think more level-headed individuals might say otherwise, though.
Interesting. And so, and here's Hamilton, if he doesn't want the F1 community to love him, I guess the way to do it would be to give your mate, Justin Bieber, and I'm assuming they're mates because, like, why else would he be there? They seem pretty chummy. Give your mate the champagne first before celebrating with your team. That didn't go down too well, did it?
Yeah, he offered him a drink. He sort of like, to say, yeah, you drink? Now, I thought he was going to shake it up with spray it in the face, and I thought he would have been redeemed in my eyes then. Yeah. He would have been all singing. He would have been the best. But he just let him have a little drink, which, by the way, Bieber nearly choked on, which is quite amusing.
I want to say, weasel. Did they check his ID first?
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe how huge Justin Bieber was, because, like, I don't know, like, I left the sort of being young and normal scene, and he was just some kid who did a nice YouTube video. And now he's like the biggest star in the entire world, and he can just literally do whatever he wants. Monaco grid, he's just there. Hey, well done, everyone. Well, good for him. Good for that young man.
He just stood there like a spare part. Like, you know, there's an interaction with Hamilton. And then for the rest of you, he just stood there like he didn't know what to do. So he's like, oh, congratulations, dog. And then that was it. He just stood there like a mannequin.
Congratulations, dog. We should say that to each other at the end of every show. All right, let's go for some awards. And yes, I know another F1 show does awards, but I didn't steal it from that F1 show. I did steal it, but I didn't steal it from that F1 show. Frogpants. Who is your thing, driver, team, or what's it of the weekend? This is the good one. Who did good stuff, Chris Stevens?
Daniel Ricciardo. He was perfect. All weekend, didn't put a foot wrong.
I'm trying to think. Did he do anything wrong?
No, he didn't. Not a single scrape against the wall, not a single error was made. And I just knew going into the weekend that he was going to be brilliant.
What about bottling it through that car's width that Hamilton left after the chicane?
You know, he got a snap of oversteer. Can't blame him for that.
Matt, agree? Agree?
He didn't bottle it.
Maybe he just thought he was going to get the door shut on him and get smashed into the wall.
Matt,
that's what some people have said.
That's what some people have said. Well, there you go. There you go.
Some people have said.
Matt, who's your thing of the week?
The weather.
The weather. Yes, congratulations.
Weather wins. Thank you, weather, for giving us an interesting and fun and exciting to watch for at least half of it. Monaco Grand Prix.
Yes, we should thank whoever is in charge of the weather, Poseidon, I believe. Thank you, merciful Poseidon. Who else is on this panel? Anil's gone. Me. Oh, yeah, who do I think? Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton, back on track. First win since Austin. Championship back on. He is within a race win and a Rosberg retirement now. But on a serious note, he made a great call on the wets, and he pushed hard. Now, I'm not sure that every single driver on the grid would have put themselves in that car in the position to take advantage of Ricardo's mistake. So because he's already got one tick, Ricardo, so I'll give mine to Lewis Hamilton. Tony, what? Go on, take a guess.
I am going to go for young Max because it's unconventional, but he was speaking. He's been
wait a minute, what? Max Verstappen? He crashed seven times.
Wait. Listen. Bear with me, right? He was being interviewed. And she said, in the interview, she was saying like, oh, so, was there an issue with the car? And he was like, no, the car was checked thoroughly. There was nothing wrong with the car. And then later on, he actually said, yeah, he held his hands up and said, yeah, it's my fault. Driver error. He had an out there. He had several outs where he could have done what maybe a lot of other mature drivers would have said and more experienced guys would have been, oh yeah, it was, I didn't do anything wrong. I had the right setting engaged. But he didn't. He just held his hand up and says, yeah, I'll do better.
That doesn't impress me one bit.
No.
Owning up to your own mistake. It was pretty clear it was his own mistake. We saw it crashed in FP3. It crashed in qualifying. Crashed in the race.
I defended you another episode ago, Chris Stevens, to Spanish when he's been... Oh, no, that's it now. I'll see you next time.
Oh, I hate to rip you apart, T. But...
Yeah, so he's just like that kid next to like the burning rubble, just putting his hand up going, my bad. Yeah, no, we can tell. Because you're the burning rubble. You're holding a lighter. We can see that it's your bad. All right, hey, it's a, there are opinions are like noses. Everyone's got one. Thanks for your contribution, T. Hang on a minute.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Who missed the apex? This is the bad one. Who do you think did a bad thing, Chris Stevens?
Yes, Chris Stevens, correct. Sorry.
Yay! Now someone else hates Chris Stevens. Yeah. I just caught in the chat room Vortex Mortio saying, doesn't Spanners get tired that whenever Chris Stevens and him disagree, Chris is always right. That has never happened. But there we go. Yes. I thought we were friends, Ken. I thought we were friends. Etu Mortio. Right, who did the bad thing, Chris Stevens?
This is gonna make people forget every positive thing I've ever said about this guy. But Nico Rosberg.
Yeah, he had a shocker. I think. Yeah, I agree.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want people to suddenly tweet me saying you are a Hamilton lover and a Rosberg hater.
No, because you're not. You're definitely not.
Because I've said plenty of nice things about Nico Rosberg this year.
Yep. Yeah.
So please don't tweet me saying that.
Yeah, he's got fined half a yard there, hasn't he, Matt? Who did the bad thing? Who was bad?
Well, one needn't look no further than the Red Bull pit first floor.
Yeah, the pit wall.
For cocking it up completely, I think.
Yeah, Red Bull as a team. Tony, who is your bad award thing?
Also agree with Matt, but also Raikkonen. I just think he needs to sort his act out. He's just a terrible, terrible person. And by the way, I noticed you all call him Kimmy, like some sort of F1 shorthand, because Raikkonen, but I don't like him, so I refuse to be on first name terms with him. So
Mr. Raikkonen.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm giving my Oh No, You Missed the Apex award to Marcus Ericsson. Get out. Get out of F1. Marcus Ericsson, you're in Monaco. Get in the sea. It's right there. Get in the sea. We have one more award, which is...
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
And that is the award for sort of... It's generally for radio and interview behaviours when people have thrown their teddy out of the pram. He had a great race. He did a great qualifying. He didn't put a foot wrong, but he definitely gets the Daddy I Want a Pony award. And he said, and to be fair, he admitted it. He said, I held it together with Spain. I do not know how to handle this, but the language he used, I've been, I can't actually use some of it. Screwed? Is that right?
Yeah,
I've been screwed here, I've been messed up there. He directly blamed the team. There was no, hey, we win as a team, we lose as a team. And he kept saying, I don't want to say anything right now because I just want to get out of here. I don't want to say anything. But what I will say is that the team messed it up and it basically went on to then say everything. So Daniel Ricciardo gets that from me. Please, guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to an active chat room. I tell you what, we could have had a podcast of just Tony reading out the conversations from the chat room, couldn't we, T? Near impossible to keep up with today. We might have to get you some help in the future.
It was dead busy. And then obviously I don't know what I'm talking about. So that compounded the issue. But I really appreciate everyone jumping in though. We like it busier. We'd rather it busy than quiet.
If you're finding us on spannersready.com/, I think, missed apex, that's great. You can listen to the show from the player in there. But please, it really helps us out if you subscribe on your podcast app or on iTunes. If you see more than one missed apex feed, mine is the one that says buy Spanners Ready. We would really appreciate you, as we said, going to the Facebook page, Missed Apex Podcast on Facebook. And did you know there are two ways in which you can give me money if that's the sort of thing you'd like to do? You can go to Patreon and you can go to spannersready.com and go to the Support Us page and click the Missed Apex tab there and set up a micropayment. We are trying to do things here on Missed Apex and at spannersready.com. At the moment, what we are funding is a mixing desk for Matt Trumpets so he can take the reins of show production without me, completely sans Spanners on occasion. Not the race review shows, probably the tech shows. Chris Stevens is also going to get into a similar situation where he can produce podcasts. The patrons we have already covered hosting fees this month, which has been fantastic. So if you could spare a micropayment, $1 a month, that would be much appreciated. Also, Matt, you can hire us to produce your podcast at spannersready.com/ hire us. If you've got stuff to say and you want to say it, but you can't be bothered to do all the things like record, edit, master audio, host the files, publish on iTunes, well, you can hire us. SpannersReady.com/hire us. Chris Stevens, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on Twitter at cstevens_journo, and they can also read my stuff at www.formulaspy.com.
I don't recommend either of those things. Matt Trumpets, where
I
can
do.
People, Matt Trumpets, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at MattPT55, and please, by all means, go read my race and quality reviews on thejudge13.com. But most importantly, if you don't want to have to watch your Formula One race ironing pants and surrounded by noisy children
like Tony,
go buy my wife's book, Amanda Weaver, A Common Scandal, comes out literally this day we are recording. Go buy it now, give it to the missus, and enjoy your race in peace.
She will be distracted, and then she will want to cuddle you. Tony, people can find you where?
Well, we're running short on time, but I'm going to forgo my plug and throw this comment in because I really appreciate it. Generic F1 fan, you guys are great. I love the professional unprofessionalism, and this podcast easily beat the official F1 race review by the BBC. Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Well, we also like the official programs from the BBC, but we really appreciate that. The chat room have been absolutely fantastic. I urge you to come and join us on the live stream. I've actually started posting the times now. So if you go to the live stream page, you will see when we're recording. Other than that, I'd like you to check out some of the dad's podcasts, a Dad Hub podcast, and loads of other things at spannersready.com, including articles. So, wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. See you next time on Missed Apex. And as now is the tradition, I forget comment of the week. And I go to Tony late, just as the music fades out, before clicking
comment of the week.
90 minutes in, what's comment of the week?
Oh, I'm so tired. I want to go to bed. Okay, welcome, podcasts. See what I did there? Podcast is an anagram of podcast.
I'm sleepy.
Yeah, copyright me. From Gary Gerhardt. Between Hamilton going from full wets to slicks, Ricardo sitting in a pit box like a sitting duck, or Perez sticking that Force India on the podium, I'd say it was a rather exciting Monaco. Love it when it's not just another Mercedes train. Make them work for it.
Where was that from? The Facebook page?
Yes, sir.
Ah, brilliant. That is a really nice summary to end. See you later, guys.
Comment of the week.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.